Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody. Welcome to a Wednesday edition of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. As always, we are free on Wednesday because of our friends at MyBookie. Listen, if you're going to gamble during football season, and who isn't, you need a site that is safe, that is secure, and always gets you what you need when you need to place a wager. And MyBookie does that. They have a great gaming app to make your bets easy to place. You can bet on anything you freaking want. And right now, you use the code HAPPY25, you get 10% sign-up bonus. You put 100 in the account, you get 10. You put 200, you get 20. Go to mybookie.ag, that's MYBOOKIE.AG, mybookie.com. You play, you win, you get paid. All right, Andrew, this is a special episode for us this week. We're doing an awesome thing this year. You have brought back your grades from Saints blog, Saints Nation, which was one of the main reasons I found you, was your grades are fantastic. And I'm not just saying this. Like, Andrew, he's on this freaking blog because his grades, I read them, and I'm like, these are fucking amazing. This guy can actually write a Saints player grade that I can understand, and it's funny, and he can explain football to me. So these grades are awesome. You're bringing them back. If you pay $10 and you pay patron, you get access to Andrew's written grades, and you get early access to this podcast during the year. You want to do it. So this was your inaugural grading, Andrew. Was it like riding a bike? Did you have to get back on? Did you have a little trouble after giving it up?
It was totally like riding a bike. You know, I think I did it for, God, I think I did the blog for 7 years or whatever it was. And, I mean, I enjoyed it, but, you know, it's a simple process that kind of just went right back to what I did, which is, you know, I write down a grade that after watching the game once, you know, just in, as a fan, I put down a grade for each player that I think they have. So it kind of gives me a framework with, okay, this is my judgment without anything. And then I'll look at the statistics, and then I'll allow that to manipulate the grades so that you can't really use offensive linemen other than maybe penalties or whatever. But, you know, really I look more closely at position players, right? Like statistics that maybe will influence the grades with stuff that I missed. And then I'll rewatch the game. And that's where, you know, I'll pause things, slow motion things, and I'll give added weight to key plays. So, like, if there is a touchdown or just a huge play by the opposition, then it's immediately, okay, who screwed up? Why did this play happen? And so I'll weight those plays maybe a little bit heavier. So anyway, I don't know that I got into that kind of detail this round because, as I mentioned in preseason, you know, this is kind of an abridged version. But that to give fans a vibe on this, like that's kind of what I do. And you know, I would love to spend more time with the All-22 and go into even more detail, but then I can't have it ready for you on Monday. So, you know, that's another piece of that puzzle. It's got to go pretty quick.
And the thing is too, is you know, this grade, like these grades are going to be great. And the thing is that Andrew does that I loved when he first writes the grade is he will a lot of times reinforce what you see on the TV, but he takes it to another level. And you'll be like, oh yeah, I thought Jari Evans was great. And Andrew will be like, yeah, he was great. And he'll just remind you, oh yeah, and that defensive tackle across from him, he's all pro. And you kind of, these things, as the game goes on and you're in the moment, you forget who guys are up against, especially in the interior. And Andrew breaks it all down, and that's why I love it. So these grades, you look, they're going to be awesome. You're going to get them all year long. And Andrew's looking forward to doing them, and I'm looking forward to doing this podcast that you guys are going to get early access to before everyone else, and it's just going to be great all year. So let's dive into these grades. And I just want to say, Will Lutz, you gave him an A, and it's kind of obvious, but I think we're getting to the stage, Andrew, where not only is Will Lutz a made guy with the Saints, but like they paid him as the best kicker in football, and I don't know if he is anymore because they had a couple people sign after him. But I think you can make the argument, and there's not really an argument necessarily against him because he's done it, and he's starting to do it in big situations too.
Yeah, well, you can just tell when a kicker goes from, you know, maybe a head case or just really focused on his technique, to just kind of being in a flow where he's a robot almost doing his thing. And that's what it kind of feels like with Lutz now. But, you know, yeah, business as usual for him. You know, I think with kickers and punters, it's a pretty simple task. You know, there's not a whole lot going on. You either make your kick or you don't. And, you know, I think maybe the most tricky kick, I mean, he had the 52-yarder, which he made. And so it was nice to see him get tested with a little distance. But then there was also the high snap, which, you know give kudos to Morstead on that one. But, you know, a lot of times a bad snap that's high and behind him that can disrupt the timing. You know, I would give most credit to Morstead on that kick for getting that ball down as quickly as he could and doing his job as a holder. But still, that can be disruptive, and, you know, give credit to Lutz also for making that kick.
I feel like Will Lutz has moved into a place where if it's inside of 55 yards and it's indoors, I expect him to make it. And that is bananas. Like, 52-yard
totally
field goal,
fair, yeah.
I expected him to make it. And kicking it in the NFL is just it's bonkers.
Well,
now.
it's kind of how he felt about Morton Anderson, because at the time he was the best kicker in the league, but then you realize that his percentage points are like 10 points higher than Morton Anderson was, and that makes you realize, well, everyone's good now. Everyone in the league, I would say, with few exceptions, are better than what Morton Anderson was in his prime. And that's how good kicking has gotten in general.
If you don't kick, if you don't make 80% of your kicks, they cut you.
Yeah.
That's it.
But Lutz is one of the best of the guys doing it. So he's awesome.
All right. So this is a guy who's sort of, with the Emmanuel Butler hype, has sort of crept up on people. And Dante Harris, you gave him an A-. I'm just going to let you go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think – you know, him being explosive was exciting. You know, I thought he had a couple big returns on kickoffs, and he was one man away from breaking it. But the two things that were most impressive to me, the first was that, you know, he had a guy that was right there tackling him, and he broke the tackle. And so a lot of time with explosive little guys like that, they sometimes don't have great toughness. They don't break tackles. And so, you know, as a returner, that's great if you have the speed and elusive ability. But, and he has the one cut and go, which Darren Sproles have. You know, Reggie Bush, Tommy Lee Lewis, they were quick players, but they didn't really have that one cut and go style to the return game. So Deontay Harris has that, which was the first thing. But to see him break a tackle, it's like, okay, he's got a little toughness. Like, if you try to arm tackle him or give him a weak tackle, he can run through that and keep going. So that was good to see. Honestly, his technique on the fair catch was maybe in some ways most impressive to me, because you see him get under the ball, you see him catch it cleanly, comfortably. One of the main reasons Jairus Byrd had a lot of chances.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
As a punt returner, when the Saints were inside their 20, was because they trusted him and his hands, and that's why he would be back there instead of maybe some of the guys that could actually return the ball, right?
Yeah, well, that's what happened on a Monday night. The Saints, they were playing Atlanta. They were up 7-0. Tommy Lee Lewis botched a punt. And Atlanta went on to just steamroll the Saints. And afterwards, Sean Payton was like, fuck this. Jarris Bird, fair catch every time.
Yeah, just fair catch everything, yeah. And so, you know, and that's the thing about Tommy Lee Lewis. It's not that he wasn't explosive or that he couldn't do it. He always made me so nervous. I think all of us, because he just didn't catch the ball that cleanly.
Yeah.
Like, it just didn't feel natural. So anyway, I think that was the most impressive part for me with Deontay Harris is he just looks natural back there. It looks like he's been doing kick returning his whole life. He's comfortable with it. And so I think it's a natural position for him.
Yeah, I don't think final thought on him. I don't necessarily think he's a lock to make the roster, but I do think he's one more good return probably away from being a practice squad at minimum.
I think I'll go a step further, Ralph. I don't think he's going to clear waivers if the Saints cut him. The key here is he can't fumble. You know, for these next three games, he really cannot fumble. But if he doesn't do that, and maybe he breaks one or two more returns, I think he will be the kick returner for someone. If the Saints decide to go with Marcus Sherrills, I think he will not clear waivers, and he will be the returner for somebody.
Well, either one of them. They probably won't clear waivers because somebody will look at Sherrills and say, oh, he's a veteran guy. He's Minnesota. He's really great. Especially if a team, if they have a disaster situation. It's not return game, right? But Chicago right now, their kicking is a disaster, right? So if...
Yeah. I mean, there's some team that's... I mean, put to you this way. The Saints last year, if they had seen this tape from Deontay Harris on a different team, they would have picked him up and said, you're our return guy. Bye, Tommy Lee. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. Before we get to Teddy Bridgewater, I want to go to Dave's adopted UDFA son, little Jordan Humphreys, because he, Andrew, was struggling so much in practice. And people were like, I don't know. He better get it together. He may, even though they don't make – I forgot who said it, but somebody was like, hey, I know the NFL teams don't cut down until – they don't do stage cuts like they used to. But little Jordan, he better get it together or he may get cut right now. And he showed out in the game.
Yeah, well, he cost Rishard Matthews a roster spot. so that's something. But, only two catches, and they were both in the second half. So I don't think you draw too much from that. I mean, you also have to consider his competition, but – you know, his first catch was a shorter one, but he showed his size. You know, he's 6'4", 220, and he muscled his way to a first down after the catch. So that was good to see. And then his second catch was the 33-yard touchdown where, you know, he catches a ball coming across the middle and races to the end zone. So I think he showed really three things. He showed size and physicality. He showed the ability to stretch a play with his speed. And he showed good hands. So, you know, that was really encouraging, I think he really needed to have a game like that. I think anything short of that probably was the end for him, considering how all these young receivers are doing. But all of a sudden now, you know, he's kind of in the mix, and he had a good game. So now you see maybe what he can do if he can build off that. You know, Emmanuel Butler is going to play in these games coming up, and those guys really, to me, are kind of the same player because they're both 6'4", 220. They similar stature, similar size. So Saints aren't going to keep both of them. Maybe one makes the team, maybe one makes the practice squad. But I feel like Emmanuel Butler is direct competition for little Jordan Humphrey. And I would say still, even after this game, based on training camp, Butler's maybe a step ahead of him. So he's got to keep playing games like this.
The Butler hype is out of control. Christian Garrick and Bobby Hebert have Emmanuel Butler ahead of Kirkwood. on the depth chart. They had Emmanuel Butler ahead of Kirkwood and Tre'Quan Smith, and I was like,
well, I don't think. I mean, Kirkwood and Tre'Quan Smith have seniority, and they're guys that were actually on the team last year and made plays in real games. But I don't think – I mean, we know Ginn and Thomas are on this team, but if you were to ask me right now to name the number three receiver, I have no confidence in that. Like, I couldn't tell you. And, I mean, there's a bunch of guys like Simi Cobb, Austin Carr, Lil Jordan Humphrey, Emmanuel Butler – Tre'Quan Smith, Kirkwood. So there's a ton of guys that vying for that spot.
I'm not saying,
and I don't. It's not decided.
I'm not saying that Emmanuel Butler can't go out and catch four balls this week in against the Chargers and move to number three. Like, I'm totally open to that scenario. I'm just saying, right now, on August 13th, dude, you can't have Butler ahead of Tre'Quan Smith and Kirkwood. No. Like, he's got to do it in an NFL game. Like, I refuse to put him there. Now, I will move him up rapidly.
I think the coaches feel the same way, but you know, I think so. This game coming up against the Chargers will be big, and there's a chance that the Saints will start Breeze because it's against the Chargers in California, and he'll want to play a little bit. So maybe he plays a drive, but. That's one thing. Like, if they go out in the first quarter and Breeze throws two balls to Butler and zero to Tre'Quan, and you start to think, he's got a little more chemistry with that guy.
Yeah.
I think that starts to change the game pretty quick.
Yeah. So let's get to Teddy Bridgewater. He's the topic all last week after the game and early this week. Of course, he was the focus of our podcast. First of all, what did you see from him that – did you see anything from him that you were like, "Oh, I didn't realize he was that way"? Did anything about him surprise you?
Yeah. I mean, let's start with the good. I mean, I knew he had a live arm, but I think he definitely confirmed that. And you know, the long ball to Grayson in particular. But I just thought the few times that he pushed the ball down the field, he looked pretty good. And Dave Cariello actually had a good point, which is, you know, I view Breeze as an elite receiver, as an elite quarterback, because of something Zach Strief said on the podcast. A lot of times he's throwing guys open. In other words, they're completely covered, but he throws it the only place the receiver can get it. And if there's trust and time to task between those two, a lot of times he's completing passes where the coverage is just perfect. And those quarterbacks are not making that throw.
Google Dan Orlovsky from today from Get Up. He showed that exact play with Drew Brees, the throw to Dan Arnold that Dan Arnold dropped in the NFC Championship game. Orlovsky used it as his exhibit A that Brees is not in decline because he froze it and he's like, look at these five receivers. Who is open? None of them are open. Now watch this throw. And he put it where only Dan Arnold could make a play, and it was a perfect throw, and Dan Arnold dropped it. But that's something that, like, there's like three dudes in the NFL that can do it.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I don't think Bridgewater's there, but Dave made a good point on that drop touchdown by Michael Thomas, which is the coverage is perfect. And Bridgewater throws an outside ball, really the only place where Michael Thomas can go get it, and the corner has no chance. And unfortunately, it's a drop, and you know, the corner gets in the mix there and knocks the ball away. But that was a play that easily could have been a touchdown, and I thought that was a great throw. There was a couple things. There was one rollout to Tre'Quan where the location of the ball was way behind him. It was a completed pass, but it's just, you know, that's little stuff. And I feel like Breeze is always automatic with that stuff. And we take it for granted. That if there's one thing I would say we're spoiled by with Breeze, it's like seemingly easy throws that just seem like a throw that anyone could make. But he puts it in a location where the receiver or the running back's momentum is going forward. And it doesn't slow the play down. And that rollout past the Tre'Quan Smith is a perfect example where it's slightly behind him. He makes the catch, but it gives linebackers that split second to catch up in pursuit. And the play goes for a couple yards instead of 8 yards, you know? And so it's a big difference. Timing and rhythm, hitting a guy in rhythm is everything in this league with how quick the defenders are and how quickly they close those windows. And so, you know, it's one of those things in college, maybe you can get away with that, but in the pros, you don't. So yeah. there was a little stuff. I think there was a couple times where he took a couple sacks, which was disappointing. And but I was impressed that, you know, he didn't force things. You know, he checked down a lot. If the throw wasn't there, he was dumping it off to the running back. That's something that Breeze does all the time. And I thought that was a lot of maturity from Bridgewater to just when the play wasn't there for him, he took the checkdowns. But I thought the most encouraging thing was his 2-minute drill, which really was flawless and masterful. Dan Arnold makes a great play there at the end to get the touchdown, but that was a great drive.
Yeah, and look, to me, Bridgewater showed exactly why the Saints have given a third-round pick and invested $15 million plus with him over 2 years. And I don't think anything – if anything, the Saints, what they hoped of Bridgewater – it's progressing exactly like they want. Now, look, we got the Breeze questions. That's not this podcast because this is grades. But, I mean, so far, so good. And that third-round pick looks like a great deal. Latavius Murray, who you in April said would be a bust, your grade on him was a B-. How did he look? Did he move the needle for you to thinking better of him?
Yeah, definitely. Small sample size, so it's just really hard to grade a player like that when he touches the ball six times. But that throw in the flat where, you know, he kind of gets led a little bit by Bridgewater, and that actually kind of made me nervous because it was a great throw by Bridgewater, but that's a throw I like him making to Kamara. You know, if it's a different running back that I don't trust his hands, I don't want you throwing it to an outside position where he's got to go get the ball. I'd rather you just hit him in the chest, even if it allows the defenders to catch up a little bit. I'd rather just a catchable ball, which, you know, he could secure easily and then run forward. But, you know, he kind of leads him a little bit. And Latavius Murray's adjustment to the ball there on that big gain on that passing play was pretty impressive. I mean, he just looked very natural catching the ball. And so that was a surprise to me because that wasn't really what I felt was in his arsenal. I thought, you know, he was really just kind of a north-south runner. But if this can be part of his game and an element of his game, I think he all of a sudden becomes a fantasy prospect, a late-round fantasy prospect for people. And I also think he's maybe becomes more like Mark Ingram than we thought in terms of his capabilities on the field. And that would potentially open up the playbook for Sean Payton when Murray's on the field and allow him to call a lot of different plays, which I think means he would potentially play more. So that was encouraging. He also had a third and short carry, which he converted for a first down. And, you know, that was an area of his game that I was worried about. So really small sample size, but I saw some good things.
Yeah. Just by the way, Andrew just broke down every single touch Murray had. That's why you're going to pay $10 for these grades and you're going to want this podcast early and you're going to want to read his written grades. He just broke down every touch the man had in a preseason game. You're not getting that anywhere else. So, Jaquizz Rodgers, I don't watch the tape like you, Andrew. He looked fat, though. He looked fat. I'm just going to say.
Well, you know, he did. He looked different from his playing days in Atlanta and Tampa. And I think the Saints may be hoping he'll play his way into shape. But look, this is what happens when Matt Days gets injured and Buck Allen gets injured and Rob Kelly gets injured. This is the fourth veteran running back in the pecking order that they've had in camp. So, you know, the litter of running backs, veteran running backs out there is dwindling to fat guys, you know, that are completely out of shape. And that's what clearly Jaquizz Rodgers was. But, you know, he used to be an elusive and explosive back, Yeah, I wasn't seeing that at all in this game. So he's a shell of his former self, and I don't see any path to the roster for him based on what I saw.
Offensive line, you gave it a C-, and it sort of bears that out. You can talk about what you saw in the game, but the Saints are still fishing. They signed another guy, a local kid. They're still fishing for offensive linemen. They're still – whatever they're seeing, they're not happy with it.
Yeah, I just think it's tough. You know, when you're shuffling guys in and out and there's not a lot of chemistry and, you know, there's been some injuries on the offensive line, so they're holding some guys out. But I just think too often there was one guy making a mistake. And when you're on the offensive line, you know, one guy that's not comfortable and not doing his thing can really ruin the whole chemistry of the whole thing. So when their offensive lines are playing well, it's all five guys playing together. And you didn't see a lot of that. That's going to happen in preseason to some degree. So I don't see that as too alarming. But obviously they've got to get these starters healthy. I think good sign is that McCoy looked pretty good overall. But again, they really didn't see enough from any individual guy to make too much judgment. I just thought overall Saints didn't run the ball as well as I would have liked. The pass protection wasn't as good as I would have liked. And so as a group, they get a C-. I'm looking forward in regular season. Again, you get to grade these guys individually. And I think that's the thing, especially here, is there's so much shuffling in and out that you hate to crucify a guy for one mistake, right, where he gets beat for a sack, or one missed block where it's a run and then the guy gets pulled and somebody else comes in. And it's like, yeah, you know, a lot of times with offensive linemen, it's not till the second quarter that they really start to get in their rhythm, you know. And so I think it's hard on some of these guys. But overall, I didn't think it was a great performance as a group.
This is my biggest concern of the game, and I said it on the podcast in the post game, and again on Sunday night, and I'll say it again here. It wasn't Marcus Davenport being bad. It wasn't the rush defense or anything. Patrick Robinson, I worry about him because he is not young. The Saints drafted him in 2010. He is coming off a serious injury. I worry that he might be donezo as a player. And if he is cooked as a player, then the secondary becomes very, very fragile from third corner on.
You know, Patrick Robinson is a guy that, say what you will, I mean, I've always thought he was a physical player. And I thought maybe the most concerning thing was, you know, a play where he runs up to in run support to make a stop and just completely whips on a tackle. And I think part of that's maybe his time away from football. He just looked really, really rusty. You know, one of the only times the Saints were able to kind of pressure and hurry a quarterback and hit him, where this wounded duck goes up and he's kind of caught staring in the backfield. So the ball is hanging up there for what seems like an eternity, and it still falls into the waiting hands of a tight end for a touchdown. I just don't think Patrick Robinson could have played that any worse. You know, the thing that really stands out to me is that, look, this was all happening in the second half. He was not playing against Adam Thielen.
Yeah.
He was not playing, you know, he was not playing against, you know, these guys that are going to be doing it on Sunday. So it's just one game. You know, I'm not ready to write him off, but I think the fact that he's playing in the second half with those guys and he's not playing in the first half is kind of telling of how his camp's been going.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think he is a guy to watch to either get cut or get traded, because teams are so desperate at corner. I could see a team being like, eh, Saints, we'll give him a conditional 7 for Patrick, sure. We need a body, or, you know, it's just one of those things. And I don't even, you know, if it doesn't work out and Patrick Robinson ends up being washed, I don't even like blame the Saints. It's like, oh, that was a bad signing, because when they signed him, he was coming off a great year and he was older and he got hurt. So, like,
yeah,
you know, it could have been where he might have not got hurt last year against Atlanta and he would have been fine as the third corner. And maybe this year the decline starts just because age sets in, but the injury just boom, it's you're done. And that's football, man. The thing that was frightening as I read your grades and preseason, it's one of those things where you don't really pay attention to stats a lot of times. Dude, I didn't 213 yards rushing, 7.9 yards a rush. The Saints defense, I know it's just preseason, and I know it doesn't matter, but 8 yards a rush is 8 yards a rush. I don't care if it's a preseason game or it's me versus my son in the den. Like, that's bad.
Yeah. I mean, in the second half especially, you just saw a lot of long runs getting broken. And, you know, you just saw the combination of Craig Robertson, Vince Beagle, Colton Jumper, you know, a lot of these backup linebackers.
Names that sound like an old NFL game where teams couldn't use the likeness, the video game couldn't use the team names or the actual players. Like Vince Beagle and Colton Jumper, they sound like made-up names from 1990s Joe Montana football for Sega.
Right. It's like the Madden draft where, you know, it's some guy you draft out of BYU in Madden that doesn't really exist. Yeah. Well, I mean, no surprise, none of those guys were drafted. So that's what the Saints are playing with, a backup linebacker. And it showed. You know, I thought the backup linebacker play, the front seven really as a whole, was absolute garbage. And it just got worse and worse as the game wore on. And so, you know, I think Dennis Allen will talk to these guys and in practice, look at that sussed out. And I expect to see a better effort, Ralph, because it's not even that these guys will make the team. It's just embarrassing for them. Like they're trying to make they're trying to make an NFL career of it. They're trying to put tape out there.
And it's not happening.
The lack of a pass rush, the lack of tackling, the lack of edge setting, it was Spagnuolo-esque, you know, in terms of the defensive effort.
Ooh, that's bad.
And I was it was not fun rewatching.
Yeah,
that.
Not gonna work here anymore anyway.
In some ways, like it was a one score game. So and I had a good time. I was there with my son, so I didn't really realize how pathetic the defensive performance was until I rewatched the tape.
I didn't realize it until you told me, hey, my first grades are done. Did I do it right in Patreon? Can you go read it and check it for any massive typos or whatever and then publish it? I went and read it, and then it hit me, and I was like, it was like a slap across the face. I was like, God damn, that run defense was bad, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, look, you know, it's preseason.
A lot of those guys aren't going to play.
No. But the one thing, the final grade, and I feel bad doing this because the audio on this podcast has not had exactly Olympic covered itself in glory. You know what I'm saying? But you gave the Superdome audio an F. So explain yourself, as people that listen to this podcast consistently are laughing their ass off as we give somebody else an F for
audio.
Wait,
has my audio been bad?
No, just in general, this podcast, we struggle with audio.
There was this weird crackling that kept happening, and it was worse when anytime the referee, the head ref, would try to explain a penalty or, you know, he would speak and you would just hear this awful crackling. And so what would happen is they would just turn it way down because they could tell, like half the stadium, you could just tell it was like turned way down because they could tell it was a problem.
Yeah.
And so you would hear this crackling. But then, like, it was turned so far down that the parts, the speakers that were actually working, you couldn't hear them that well. So it was, like, kind of doubly awful. And then there were times where, like, the music would actually come across fine. And you'd be like, oh, it's fixed. It's fine. And then, like, halfway through the song, the crackling would come back. And they'd turn it down, like, almost immediately. So it's just – it was a pathetic – I mean, they've had all offseason to figure this out. You know? It's, like, it's just – amazing to me that the first game of the season, preseason, that they would hopefully they'll get this figured out and squared away, because it was, as a fan in the stadium, like you should have good sounding audio where you can actually hear, you know. And they also interviewed Edelson, you know, the old Brad Edelson, the old guard for the Saints in the 70s. Or Edelman, sorry. Yeah, you couldn't hear anything. Like you couldn't hear what he was saying as Mike Haas was interviewing him. And so that was too bad, because you always want to hear what old Saints players are up to, and so that was a bummer.
Yeah. So this has been the player grades for preseason. It's the podcast. We said it was going to go 15 minutes. It's gone 30. So the podcast edition is not abbreviated. This one, you got the full thing for this free, and it's awesome. You loved it. But Andrew's grades are just a taste of what you get. But during the year, Andrew, you're going to grade every player every week. Right?
Yep. And that,
so guys, this is it. You sign up at $10. You get the koozie, you get the magnet, you get the screensaver, you get the grades, the written version, and the podcast. You get it early, you get it 2 days before everybody else. I mean, that's what you want, and it's amazing. And $10, man, $10 a month is nothing. Like you will spend $10 a week and you won't even know where it goes. So I mean, this, at least you say, hey, I spend $10 a month, I get my Saints freaking coverage, I get wall to wall all year long. And that's, dude, even if you sign up in September, Andrew, and you bump back down to $2 or $1 or whatever in, you know, February when the Saints are done, that's like $50. I mean, it's nothing, okay? We don't get offended if you up and down your support for the show. It doesn't offend us, but it's a little bit of money, and I am going through these grades again. I'm so excited to be doing this. I think people are going to love this thing that we're really doing for the show. Is there anything else that you want to add to the pitch to try to convince people that they should be signing up for this?
Well, I mean, if they're excited, if they'd like to geek out and look under the hood and look more closely at, you know, how each player is doing individually, this is definitely the thing for you. And, you know, it hasn't been so long that I haven't been doing that, I feel like a lot of people that read my blog and enjoyed the grades remember it. And I've gotten a lot of messages on Twitter, person DMs and mentions just with people excited that it's back. So I didn't realize that some of you were reading it so closely and enjoyed it, but that's awesome and makes me feel like purposeful in doing this stuff. So I appreciate
And it's going to
– yeah, I think –
and it's gonna get.
I mean, I put the work in, you know.
Yeah, it's gonna get more, sort of in the weeds and technical and Andrew knows NFL coverages and formations and plays and philosophies and all that. But in preseason, like, it's all vanilla. So he'll be able to break down each reading these grades. He'll look at advance and what other teams are doing. So he'll know. He'll be like, hey, this team, they run a lot of 11. They run a lot of 12. They run a lot of 21. They run a lot of 3 wide receivers. And the Saints stunk at it, or the Saints kicked their ass at it. So it's just going to be awesome. So, guys, this has been a free preview of it. But totally check it out. It's awesome. Sign up at the $10 level. It's amazing. Do it. And we will see you again tomorrow.
When you visit a state as big and diverse as Texas, there are a million different trips you can take. Let's say you've got an appetite for whitewater kayaking. You can get your own.
So this is why they call it Devil's River.
Trip to Texas. Or maybe you have an actual appetite. I'll take a pound of brisket, 6 ribs, 3 links of sausage, and a piece of pecan pie. Trip to Texas. Go to traveltexas.com/get your own for the only trip to Texas that matters. Yours.